readings on the Green Sundays principally center and focus themselves on the nature of Christian discipleship, the cost of Christian discipleship, the ways and the means that you and I have of putting into our hands the deep things of Christian faith and belief to become the transparencies and reflections of God's grace and love that we are called to be. Additionally, the Green Sundays also, from time to time, you ought to hear something about the nature of our faith and belief. There should be some educational aspect to this, a didactic component, to use the fancy term. I was reading this week to prepare this sermon one of my favorite little books called An Anglican Catechism by Edward Norman. Edward Norman was the Chancellor of York Minster. Now, I have to say, in the interests of honesty and openness, that Edward Norman has become a Roman Catholic. Don't ask! But in the interview, I read that he had with the Times, he said, "I don't repute anything I wrote in the Anglican Catechism in so many words, so I feel somewhat safe." I want to read this to you, and I hope it connects to what in the world I'm going to preach about. However important the ministry of sharing the presence of Christ, the cultivation of mutual responsibility for human welfare, the reconciliation of estranged parties, the pursuit of a just society, it is nevertheless the transmission of the knowledge of salvation itself, the honor due God, which are at the center of Christian ministry. It is at its very essence a ministry of teaching. And I mention this because I want to do a little teaching on hierarchy today. I got to reading about this. It's been on my mind, hierarchy. There are a lot of Episcopalians nowadays who believe that we should eschew hierarchy. Or, you know, no, I didn't say that he chewed all forms of tobacco, Edna. I said he eschewed all forms of tobacco. It means no hierarchy. Okay? We have the Episcopal Church in the United States, and there's some kerfuffles going on in the Episcopal Church, and people are crying the blues about a lot of things. But we forget that the Anglican Communion is the third largest church in the world. So how we understand our common life together and how we understand what hierarchy might mean in an affirmative sense might be a good thing to reflect on. Because, my friends, I'm going to suggest to you this morning that you're part of the hierarchy through your baptism. And so we need to understand a little something about it. I thought, how might this be accessible and approachable for all of us as we move forward? So I looked up hierarchy on Wikipedia. You got to be careful with Wikipedia. You all know that. It can lead you astray. But this, I think, is fairly safe. Hierarchy comes from two words, sacred, hieros, and archo, rule, is a system of ranking and organizing things or people where each element of the system, except for the top element, is subordinate to a single other element. It reminded me of the New Yorker cartoon about 15 years ago, four guys in their private club in leather chairs smoking cigars, and one looks at the other one and says, "You know, Ray, there are no echelons like the upper echelons." A hierarchy can link entities either directly or indirectly, and either vertically or horizontally. The only direct links in a hierarchy, insofar as they are hierarchical, are to one's immediate superior or to one of one's subordinates. Although a system that is largely hierarchical can also incorporate other organizational patterns. Well, you're beginning to say, where is he taking us with this? Well, you know, in the reading from 2 Timothy and in the gospel, there's some things there about the hierarchy of truth and the apostolic ministry and the nature of it. And Jesus has some things to say to the apostles about how they are to comport themselves as apostles as they seek to lead and to be faithful. And remember, Luke's gospel is about 50 years out from the Christ event itself. And so they're seeking to know and understand as Gentile Christians, among other things, what it is they ought to do. So the apostolic witness is going through these processes of development. And 2 Timothy is pretty late in the Pauline or Deutero-Pauline corpus. And they're struggling with the nature of hierarchy in the apostolic ministry. So this is an important thing. Now, 2,000 years out, you and I have to come to terms with what this might mean for us in an affirmative sense now, particularly since we understand that the template we lay over Christian faith alike, clergy and lay alike, is our baptismal covenant. And so that might have something to say to us about the hierarchy of values with regard to what it is that it's important as we seek to bring some species of sacred order to how we think and be and relate in the world. That's what a hierarchical ordering has to do with things. Here's more Edward Norman. The purpose of Christian teaching is to identify the essentials of Christian truth in a manner appropriate to the circumstances of each time and place, and define ways of separating various accretions. Accretions is the 3995 word for something this size becoming this size. There's a lot of adding on going on. Okay, accretions, which are, though often in themselves valid, no longer authentic statements of Christ's message. So it may have been perfectly valid for us to think about hierarchy in apostolic ministry in a certain way in the past, and it is appropriate for us to say that perhaps that way of thinking may have had value then, but now it has less value or no value. So maybe we want to talk about hierarchy in terms of collaborative, mutually accountable, servant-driven. And we comport ourselves together in this way as we live, as Episcopalians. You know, Edward Norman's quote has something to do maybe with what's been going on in the Episcopal Church. There are a lot of very thoughtful Episcopalians, some of them in the hierarchy, who have taken a look at how we understand our common life together, how we order these sacred truths. Remember in John's Gospel, in the prologue, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word, you know? If you translate it from the Greek, logos, it means word. It can also mean plan. It can also mean organizing principle. How do we understand the Word as the organizing principle for our common life in 2007? How do we understand being the fiduciaries and the beneficiaries of the tradition with a capital T and understand its necessity? Most Christians in the world believe it important to be part of a hierarchical church because they do belong to one. And in most ecumenical conversations, the Christian faith traditions in these conversations are saying, as we seek to move forward, we're going to be more open than we have in the past to understanding that we will govern ourselves through episcopacy. Gee. It's a hard sell for some. You know, we don't have Bob Jones University sort of banging on the doors to get in, among other groups, right? But at least we've begun to see this is important. Now here's 2 Timothy. I'm going to say Paul in 2 Timothy because I am. But I need to be honest and say to you that the reigning hypothesis in biblical scholarship is that 1 and 2 Timothy are deuteropauline, which means Paul didn't write it. One of his disciples did. Well, whoever wrote it knew Paul like a twin. We got to say that. But there are some things that might indicate it wasn't so. Who cares? I read Edward Norman to you about what's useful then and maybe not so useful now. If we were to understand 2 Timothy as being deuteropauline, it might help us in the sense that, just like us 2,000 years out, a generation later from Paul, the author of 2 Timothy is saying, how do I understand hierarchy in the apostolic ministry, and what kind of encouragement am I going to give to Timothy, who Paul did know, but who now is engaged in some species of apostolic ministry himself? Who in the world is Timothy? We meet him in the book of Acts. He has a Jewish mother and a Gentile father. He's had to live with this split in his raising, and he becomes a traveling companion of Paul's. And we're treated to the advice that, or the comment in today's reading, that he wishes Timothy to touch the strength that he has been given through Paul's laying on of hands. So he's been ordained, or maybe baptized only, you know, the laying on of hands is part of that. But I suspect he's probably been ordained. And he's having a failure of nerve, that's what it sounds like to me. And he doesn't know what it's like being an apostle with this pushback from the Pauline churches later on, resistance now that comes to this message. And how do we understand being faithful in that age? So it might be useful to know, by the way, something about biblical scholarship, because it tells us about the pastoral reality on the ground. Just like when we reflect about our circumstance, we know a little something about the pastoral reality on the ground. Now, Paul is saying, you know, what I'd like you to do is to recover that sense of self, that strength, that interior self-regulation that is going to equip you to be able to rise to the challenges and the opportunities that are in front of you, to know who you are, and to understand what has been taught you in a way that is rightly ordered, to bring some precision to the way in which you think and reflect about things. One of my hobby horses, it annoys me more than I can say, is that there are a variety of serious thinking errors in this culture. You know? And in terms of people who live the examined life, every day when we swing our tootsies over the gunnels, each one of us should ask the question, how are we thinking about what it is we're doing? Because remember, the capacity for the human person to deceive themselves is infinite. So Paul is saying to Timothy, I want you to find the ways and the means to connect now to what you know to be true. Some sense of God's ordering in your life and your place in it. It's encouragement for the apostolic ministry, for the way in which we understand who we are and what we're supposed to be doing. Jesus, in the gospel for today, is speaking to the apostles. If you read the gospels, a lot of the time it says disciples, but sometimes it says apostles. So we mean that's he's talking to the 12. And they've come to him and said, increase our faith. We're having trouble here. There's pushback. Remember, all gospels are about Jesus, about the church that believes in Jesus, and the situation on the ground when the gospel was written. So we listen to what Jesus says, and we also try to make sense of it in our own day and time. How does our faith increase? So Jesus says to them, if you had faith the size of the mustard seed, and gives an absurd example of what you would be able to do with all that faith, though why anybody would want to do such a thing, I have no idea. But if Jesus wasn't about hyperbole, he wasn't about anything. Right? And so, he tells them, you've got to increase your faith by sticking to what you know, and by understanding that as you do that and are obedient to the sacred order of things, you will come to understand how to increase your faith, and you will be effective in your missionary work. He says some things here that I think for most Christian people, in fact, most human beings, a bitter pill. First of all, he treats the apostles as the masters in the little story that he tells them, and then he flips them to slaves at the end. You know? You're out in the fields all day long, you come in as a slave. Do you think the master's going to have you sit down and eat with him? He's going to say, no, put your apron on and cook me dinner. And then after you're finished cooking dinner for him, you can eat. But don't expect to be thanked because you're only doing what you're supposed to be doing. I've been a pastor for a long time. Those of you who've been pastors spend a lot of time with people who are copping huge resentments because they haven't been thanked for what they're supposed to be doing. Right? Hello? You know, this is a version in the gospel of what Jesus said. The unrighteous are going to get into the kingdom of heaven before you who have dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's. Does that mean that God does not love us as much as the ones who are unrighteous? No. It means we have always had the inexhaustible bank account of God's grace and love, God's unconditional forgiveness, acceptance, and love to do what we do. And that offer is being made to everyone and continues to be. So it's not a zero-sum game. We all get in. But it's an example that none of us should be too smug, and that we should understand that we do this because we're supposed to, because it's godly. Now what that means is that it requires a lot of faith, because when we do that, we oftentimes can see absolutely no consequence, any result from what it is that we do. We can't figure out why in the world that is the case. But faith is important because it provides us the spiritual energy to be able to rise to the occasion. I read a commentary about this gospel to prepare this sermon, and the commentary writer reminded us of The Empire Strikes Back. Luke Skywalker is on whatever planet, Ogarama Baramagao, or whatever that is, where Yoda, the spiritual teacher for Luke Skywalker, is to teach him about the Force. And as their work together comes to a conclusion, Luke Skywalker's ship is stuck in the muck and the mire of planet whatever it is. And so Yoda tells Luke Skywalker to use the Force. And so Luke Skywalker is going, nothing. Yoda goes, and there goes the ship. And Luke Skywalker says, I don't believe it. And Yoda says, that is why you failed. So this week, your tiny prayer that you blurt out from time to time, besides, oh God, let it be, increase my faith. And as you do that, may the Force be with you. Amen.